wall, and then the D Company tank went down this road, and this road was down in the ground with the high embankments on the side, about a half a mile out of town. And it had five infantrymen riding on the outside back end of it, and one of them was a bar gunner, a mounting automatic rifle operator, big, heavy set guy. And when they hit the string of mines, there was two mines, one on top of each other, strung clear across the road. And when it hit that string of mines, it flipped it like a pancake and then turned it upside down, and it skidded about 10-15 feet over the string of mines. And when it did that, it chewed up these five passengers on the back end of that tank. And the company sent someone up there, and they couldn't do nothing with it. They needed a big operation, so they sent me up there. And when we got there, we were greeted with small arms fire. They were coming from a small patch of woods over on our right. So we had to silence them, and we took out after them in a 10-ton wrecker. And whenever we saw anything moving, we blasted in that area. But finally, when we got to the side of the woods, we seen a Jeep going like a bat out of hell, trying to get away from there. And we let them have what we had, and we never had any more problems. But the small arms fire after that.
Did you hit them?
I don't know if we did or not. They were pretty far gone, and we weren't going to go look for them. So we got back over there, and we picked the guys. It was a very hard job to pick up these pieces of body and put them in the canvas. They didn't know what to do. They were going over the side of the road and throwing up. And I says, give me those pieces of canvas on the back of my recovery unit. And I rolled those bodies in there. And what they didn't see didn't hurt them. And so they were able to put them on the truck and get them out of there. And we turned that tank over and turned it around. And we're getting ready to leave. And I said, hold everything. Let's stop and say a prayer. I says, look over there. There's two mines that didn't go off. And it was right alongside of where we were. I don't know why we didn't trigger them. We were so close to them. And then I says, we got to barricade this thing with something. And then I spotted a big dead limb up on the high bank there. And then I said, well, here's something. And I put the butt end of it down there on the road and the branches up high. And then somebody had a red cloth tied it on the branches, and so it would be a warning. And then we got back in town, and we finally found somebody, and we told them that nobody can go down that road because there's two mines that didn't go off yet. And they said, and you work all, or you got to... And I says, we could hardly talk yet. But it's a very strange thing.
When you were out that tank working on it, two of the crew members survived. Were they still running?
No. They tried to get out of the escape hatch. The tank was upside down, and the escape hatch is on the bottom. And when they tried to get out of there, they were greeted with rifle fire. So they crawled out through a hole where the transmission was. There was a hole in there. I don't know how. It wasn't very big. And Mr. Freeberg told me that that's how they got out of there, was through that hole. There was other occasions that where bodies were involved. That was the one up north. Yes.
Was this the one that we were at, that you were at, or you had to put the guy's face back on and all that?
Oh, no.
The one where you, with the gun barrel at the ravine? Or not another one?
That's another one. No, this what I'm just telling you about, these body parts, there was a guy's face, unshaven face, his bearded face, with his lips, parts of his lips exposed. I said, look at here, here's a man's face. Oh, they said, how can you stand there and tell us about this?
Can you tell me one where the guy, he was still alive and his brain was hanging?
Oh, in the early part of the war, before Hill 122, we weren't with the company yet. We were delayed getting over to France because when we left England, I wasn't with the battalion. I was detoured with seven or nine vehicles on a landing barge. And instead of going straight down to the make a left, quick left turn in the heart of town. And Shorty Kubetsko was driving. He had it wide open. We had to catch up because somebody's truck had a flat tire in the front. And it only took us 15 minutes to change it. And that's what the Englishman told us. It only took you 15 minutes. You didn't lose no time. So we were on the double, and the MPs were giving us a sign, on the double, on the double. And then at this little intersection of cobblestone streets, narrow streets, this MP stood right in the middle of the street and put his hand out and for Shorty to turn. So at a wide open, he made that turn, and it just skidded on the cobblestone bricks, and we went through a cement wall and ended into the cemetery. We ran over a bunch of graves. And I apologized to all the people that were gathered around. And I said, I'm sorry for all this damage. Please come back out when you're leaving that cemetery. We were put on a small barge, and we got out in that channel about halfway across. And the propeller shaft busted. Because when the propeller goes out of the water, and the blades spin real fast, and then it hits the water, it snaps the propeller shaft. And it broke it off, and he said, oh, it's a common thing, we just have to get towed back. But we couldn't get towed back. Nobody found us. So we floated around for 2 days and nights, and finally on the third day, they towed us back to England, and it only took them about a half hour to change that propeller shaft, and boy, they shot us across the channel. It seemed like it was only an hour. And when we landed, the Englishmen were in charge of running the boat. So they had dropped the front door, and he was measuring the water, and his stick wasn't long enough, and finally he hit a high spot, and he says, 5 foot, okay, everybody out. So the first vehicle off was a truck, a driver and an assistant driver. I don't know who it was anymore, I forgot. And when he got off that boat ramp, he fell in a deep bomb hole, and as I went by him, I told him, be sure you got it in neutral. He was sitting in water. So when Charlie went by, I told Charlie, when you get by him, allow the back end to pass and swing it, and then back up, and I'll give you the signal. So and keep it at 15,000 RPM, you know. Don't let that RPM try and get low. Keep it going strong. And I crawled down the back end with the big loop, and I hung it on the hook of the bumper. I stood in water up to here, you know. Yeah, on the bumper of the truck, and then I felt for that hook down in there, and I lifted on there, and then I got back on and take it away. And we pulled him in, and we had to go out, back out and get another one, pull him in. And then the guards up there told us to take my crew all along this hedgerow over there, the fence along there, the barbed wire fence. So we parked along the fence, and Bellows didn't have no brakes in his 10-ton wrecker. The brakes and the air pump was running, pumping air, but there was no brakes. So I told him, keep pumping the brakes. I'm going to go back there and check. And then I heard that one diaphragm. That all the air was leaking out through that. There's a little emergency hole. What had happened is, in those diaphragms, there's dust wear. Aluminizing dust accumulates in there, and when it got soaked with salt water, it became like little ball bearings, and it held the diaphragm open. And in order to find all that out, there's about 50 screws in that 6-inch or 8-inch diaphragm. Each wheel has a diaphragm, and I did that tedious job and got it all done, and it worked fine. So we had to drain a few gas tanks. Somebody didn't waterproof their equipment good enough. And so we got all set. It was about an hour before dark. So we took off, and we were going down the road, and we took a side road. I said, where's the tank office? And one of them went down that way. So we went down that way, and we went about a mile. And I said, any tanks over there? There was people at a crossroad that were down in a ditch, you know, laying low. And I said, where's the tank outfit around here? There's nothing. What's up ahead? Germans. And they turned around and went back, got back to that big circle. And that guy said, what's the matter? And I said, there's nobody out there, but you're out of patrol. And the other side is the Germans. Well, stay here. Get your group over here by this group of trees and that big round circle and tell them to dig in. So nobody, they're all tired and didn't want to dig in. Then about 10:30, start whistling. Shells are starting. Everybody with their helmets scratching in the ground, digging a foxhole. Me and Shorty Kabetsko dug a hole behind the tank and one hole for the both of us. Shorty and I, ever since California, we stayed together all the time, all through maneuvers and going through the war. It was hard to lose him.
So what happened with the guy that was still alive and his brains were hanging out?
Oh, the early part of the war. All right, when we landed in France, and we finally the next day, we got up to the famous scene where the guy was hanging from the church steeple in the parachute. Well, in that area, there was a German tank blocking the road, and all the tanks had to kind of go through a ditch to get around him, and this officer, I don't know what rank he was, he says, you're a recovery unit, can you move that tank, get it the hell out of here, and find a spot for it. So here was this area in the front of the church, the front doors, so I figured, if I can get that damn tank, put in neutral, I'll just back it around there and put a guy inside and steer. So I just pushed him around there and got him back in that corner with my hand signals. I always had you pull this lever, go like this, pull this lever this way. Everything was signals. We didn't have power, make no noise. And it was perfection. And we went a little farther and we're coming near St. Mary Glace. And here was this paratrooper, airborne guy. He's sitting in a jeep, and they were waiting for medics to come. And the helmet had a deep cave in, and his brains was hanging out. And he had his gun pointed this way. And I walked up to him, and I says, "Oh God!" I says, "Are you with God?" He says, "I sure am." And nobody's going to touch that helmet. Just tell everybody, nobody touches that helmet. Get me to the hospital. So I didn't know it. I couldn't. I had to move.
When you saw that,
what?
It had to be horrible.
Yeah. Oh, my guts was riled up. You don't feel like eating. You feel like throwing up all the time. Yeah. It's you're quivering from head to foot. Yeah. I imagine that's why I got an ulcer. I had to walk, but I got cured